Welcome to Burr News Current Affairs Podcast with Jeremy Deacon. Listen at your leisure on www.burrnews.com.
Good day and welcome to this latest Burr News Facebook Live interview. Joined today by Justin Mathias. Justin is the chairman of the Future Bermuda Alliance, the OBA's youth wing. Thank you for joining us, Justin.
Thank you for having me.
I do my research before I do these interviews, and I couldn't really find out very much about you. You don't exist very much on social media or LinkedIn. Tell me a little bit about yourself.
I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing.
Probably.
Yeah, so I'm 25. I just went 25 this week, so it's my birthday week.
Yeah.
Thank you. I've been interested in politics for a long time, so I went to MSA my whole life, and then I went to school in St. Mary's University in Halifax, and I studied accounting and political science.
Okay.
And I graduated in May 2016. I've been involved in debate society when I was in middle school and high school, and in university I was on the Model United Nations delegation for my school. So those are my highlights. When it comes to politics, I was canvassing with Sylvan Richards back in 2012 in Constituency 7, Hamilton South. And back into this year's election, I canvassed with him also.
Okay.
So that's my little political involvement. Okay. And
so why did you join the OBA?
That's more of my ideology. I'm more of a right center when it comes to ideology. I believe in more of a progressive conservative values. So on the sense of strong physical policy, low tax, a smaller government, efficiency, more of those ideologies of where I find myself. So naturally there's only two political parties in Bermuda, so you have to make that choice.
So you're the chair of the Future Bermuda Alliance. As I said, it's the OBA's youth wing. Tell me a little bit about that. Again, it hasn't got the biggest profile that I can see. So tell me a little bit about that as well. What kind of work you do?
Yeah, so it's a little weird because it's existed the whole time that the OBA has been formed. So the OBA has been formed for about, 6 years now? Mm-hmm. And the FBA has been there the whole time. It's had a whole slew of chairs. At some times it's more prevalent than others. I think in the last couple of years it probably hasn't been as relevant within the community because, you know, there were the OBA was focused more on governing because there were real issues that were, you know, on the foot. So I think the FBA kind of was a little bit in the purview of some people. It wasn't out there as much as it had been in the past. Yeah, so if you really sit there and do your research, you'll get up articles about who was the FBA chair and what they were doing back in 2012 to 2014, and then it just slacked off a bit, so you know we're just rejuvenating it.
How are you going to rejuvenate it then? I mean, what are the membership levels now? What are they like?
The membership levels, because the FBA is kind of a caucus, right? So it's our 18 to 40 caucus. So membership levels are probably in the realm of about 100 people. It's consisted of the same amount of people that founded the FBA. So those members are still there in the background and they're still helping me
right.
if anything that I need to do. But my primary focus right now is on engaging the youth and seeing what they felt happened during the election, what they felt before the election, what they felt after, and especially now with current events, you know, how do they feel about that? That's my focus. It's not on membership right now. It's more of a listening
right.
and gauging.
So what do you envisage as chairman you will try and do with the FBA?
So I've already had a fireside. So our fireside chats are more of discussions about the issues. We had one at Senator Nick Kemp's house on August the 23rd. And that was about 20 people. And it was the average age was around 26, 27. We had a three-hour conversation and it revolved around all the issues. It revolved around especially how the election was held and, you know, who did what, the social media aspect, misinformation, stuff like that. That's where we talked about. Then in September, we helped a back-to-school initiative hosted by the Devil's Hole family. And we helped, you know, give back to the community and got school supplies and school bags.
Is this the way you see the FBA going? Sort of grassroots stuff?
Yeah, because that's how it always was. And I'm just continuing that template and getting other ideas from other people and myself of how can we sit there and, you know, go out into the community and do that outreach.
What do you find the feedback is when you talk to younger people about politics? Are they engaged? Are they disaffected?
I think a lot of young people say that they're not engaged, but they are. You know, you sit there and you have these fireside discussions and you sit there for 3 hours and they know all of the issues, but you know, it's one of those things where it's not the hot topic, right? You know, people rather talk about reality shows, people rather talk about music, people rather talk about that salacious stuff than actually talk about the stuff that matters within their own country, which is a great concern for me. And it's probably where my involvement comes into play, because it's interesting to me that a lot of people my age, older, in that vicinity, are very interested in what happens to our country, but they don't want to talk about it. They don't want to have those discussions like how adults, you know, people your age would sit there and actually have a real candid conversation about what's going on in the country. And that's a little bit concerning to me, because even on election day, even when it comes to canvassing, you don't get to hear from those voices. Mm-hmm. Some people just go to the election poll because their parents take them. And they're so disenfranchised with the system. They think that, you know, the system's corrupt and it doesn't work for anybody, and rather engage in the system and trying to make the system better, they rather just sit back and watch.
So there's a couple of questions there. The first one is, how do you get over that? How do you make them more politically active?
You just have conversations. I mean, that's the simple thing about humanity, right? Is once you have conversations with people, once you start to open the mind and see that you are interested, you do care, because it is your life, it's our life, it's your parents' life, it's your cousin's life. All of these issues that we find ourselves in the public, especially when it comes to the political system, when you talk about government and opposition and the job that they have within the House and the Senate, you know, those impact our everyday lives, and that's going to impact your life. And if you need to take an interest, if you're taking an interest in your own life, then you should take an interest in that as well.
So you said the disengaged. How do you engage them? Or rather, rephrase it actually to, why are they disengaged? What do they see that turns them off?
I think from my own experience, it's a lot of, you know, people that are older than me saying, you know, not having a conversation. You should have a conversation with your children. You should, especially during election time, not encourage your children to vote for a particular party, but tell them, here's the two platforms. These are the issues that are on the table. Sit down and discuss amongst your friends. You know, what do you think is the best option for Bermuda? What do you think is the best option for you? So my whole interpretation of what is needed is to just go around Bermuda and engage in the youth, having youth discussions and talking about real issues so that they can talk to their friends. Because it doesn't matter to me where anybody's political leanings are. It's more of, we need more people engaged in our system so that the system can work better for them.
Last August, the Youth Wing unveiled its new executive. Obviously, you're the chairman. And you've got Nandi Alderbridge as interim deputy chairman and Nick Kemp as Nandi Alderbridge as interim deputy chairwoman and Nick Kemp as interim deputy chairman and Robin Swan interim secretary. Three interims there. Are they being full-time now? Are they not interim anymore?
They were definitely changed from when that was released in the media. So
So what's happening now? Are they being filled with
non-interim
people?
Yeah, so I have two deputy chairs at the moment, Matthew Covello, John Seymour. My secretary is Chelsea Hassel. And the treasurer for the time being is Nandi Alderbridge.
Okay, so there's a permanent staff, not a permanent staff, but...
But a permanent executive, people. Yeah.
On October the 10th, you had a column, and you made, I think it was your first column, you talked about your first experience sitting at the House. Mm. And you made a comment about the boy comment from Trevor Moniz. And you said, and quote, "and the not-so-helpful, wonderful boy statement by Trevor Moniz." Now, I was thinking, in terms of kind of political speak, that was pretty strong public condemnation.
It was more of condemnation of what was actually happening. I mean, there were serious issues that were being discussed within the House. And the discussion that it revolved around was the Tourism Investment Act. So it was a piece of legislation that was brought on by OBA and in consultation with a lot of stakeholders within the tourism industry. And the formation of the BTA, I mean, this is stemming from 2013, and it's a long road to get to where that act got to. And members of the opposition were speaking on that issue, and the government was bringing the bill in, you know, with this grandiose appearance that it was nurtured by them or it was an act that they worked on. And even though it was a collaborative piece of legislation, it was still in the mindset of, hey, listen, we really need to talk to the community about how this happened, how this came about. And why I say it's not a helpful comment, because at the time you're talking about serious issues. You had, you know, the Minister of Public Works talking about bringing back Roundup. There were very real issues that were talked on that Friday, and those were being overshadowed by the PLP using, you know, MP Munis's comment and taking it out of context, which that's what I believe. If you really sit there and you listen to the whole audio, even though it's a bad word to use, and you can get after in hindsight, I don't think that it was meant in that intention that the PLP and Diallo Rabin says that it was.
There was a bit of party politicking going on, was it, do you think?
Oh, of course. I mean, Diallo Rabin came back with a whole prepared statement at the end for motion to adjourn, so I think it was definitely used as a political point scoring. And that's why I wrote the article, because I'm like, why, if you've won in the biggest election win in history, in Bermuda history, and you're still trying to score political points when there's actually real issues and there's governance to be had, that's what I felt was really, that was where it came to me that I had to write that piece. Because, I mean, we're going into, you know, the old style of politics and where it's more about scoring political points than governing. And you say that you've won a large mandate. Well, you need to go out and do that mandate and stop from the, you know, scoring the political points, especially on race.
Is it that kind of thing that turns off young people?
Of course. Because to us, it's, you know, the efforts and everything that has brought us to 2017 and living in the reality that we do. Race isn't as much as an important and emotive issue to us, because we're living in a time that people that fought for us, people that protested, people that got us rights, we're living in that, you know, that now, right? So it's not as an emotive issue to us. So we're more focused on the real issues. We're more focused on solving, you know, problems within the education system, solving problems within the healthcare system. So we kind of get disengaged, because why are we having these discussions that have been being had and being rehashed when there's actually real problems that we can solve today? So that's why I think there's disengagement from the youth, because they're just tired of listening to the same old rhetoric and not seeing action.
Where does the OBA go from here? I mean, you mentioned yourself, it's the biggest election victory in history. Mm-hmm. The party was pretty much crushed. And how do they rebuild? What would be your strategy? What would be your advice?
So my
to rebuild and become an effective, a more effective party.
Yeah. So for me, it's a bit different, because the OBA, to me, that's the party that I joined. Mm. So I'm not connected to all the stuff that happened before, how it was formed. But the actual, you know, the values, the principles that are within the Constitution, all that startup work within the OBA is something that we're still fighting for and something that we're really a part of. And, you know, it was an amazing thing to be a part of in 2012 for a new formation of a party to win government. I mean, that's unheard of in politics around the world. So that was a huge achievement. I think some of the building works that we did in 2011, 2012 to get us to win government, I think some of that was left to the hayside when they did become government, and, you know, governing became the main aspect. And the party kind of, it didn't fall apart, but a lot of the focuses and values and principles that we built on about diversity and about listening to people, some of that wasn't taken into consideration. So I think now it's just, you know, the community has spoken, our supporters have spoken, the Bermudian electorate has spoken, and we have to just continue the work that we started in 2011 and 2012.
You mentioned a lot of it fell by the wayside. How do you make up that kind of lost ground then? How does a party make up that lost ground and gather some more momentum. What would you, if you could advise the leader, we'll come on to the leadership in a minute, is there kind of a couple of key things you think?
Well, for me, I see the Bermuda electorate as being the ultimate swing voters now. I think in 2012 you saw a huge swing and huge shift, and you saw it again in 2017. So,
well, the swing was a lot bigger in 2017, wasn't it?
Exactly.
Quite a low turnout in 2012.
Exactly. And you have to gauge whether, what are you doing to find that middle ground again? And I think we have to do a lot more of grassroots, like you said. I think we have to go out and engage the community and find out, you know, exactly what's going on. Why it was so much of a surprise to some people, because when I went out canvassing, it didn't matter who I went to. I could have went to an OBA house, I could have went to a PLP house, and it was like a thank you tour. Everyone was like, thank you for saving the economy, thank you for saving the island. So I don't think that, even though there is that reservation where people said, hey, the OBA wasn't listening to the people, at the same time, I don't think it's going to be that hard of a job, because people, even on both sides, were very appreciative of the work of the OBA government.
They were very appreciative of the work, but the voter didn't say that.
No, it didn't. But I mean that's just, it's history now, right? And the Bermudian electorate decided that for most of the social policies, because both platforms were virtually the same, they thought that the PLP were going to do better to do that. And that's what they decided, and they have every right to decide that. And the next election, you're going to have the same exact thing. You're going to have two platforms, and the public are going to have to decide. I think that it's wrong. I think you had an interview with Walton Brown, and he suggested that the PLP base grew. I don't take that as any assertion that anybody's base grew. I think that the Bermudian public is becoming a lot more swing when it comes to the electorate. And I think if this government doesn't do what they promise, the next election they could be voted out as well.
Do you think that's likely? I mean, a majority of 12, I would have thought that the OBA on that level at least would be out of parliament for at least a couple of terms. It's going to be very difficult for them to overturn such a big majority.
Well, I mean, an election, you know, everybody doesn't have a position on election day, right? So you put out the field that you believe is necessary to do the job of governing, and the Bermudian electorate decides that, not anybody else. It doesn't matter if you have a majority or if you're opposition, anybody can win.
Oh, clearly, yeah. But it's very difficult, I'd have thought, for an opposition party to overturn 12-seat majority.
We're living in a new era, right? We just had the biggest election win. In 2012, you had a party that just formed win government. So there might be history whenever we have an election the next time.
When is the leadership election?
I think everybody's looking towards the middle of November, end of November.
Have you got any idea who might become leader? Anybody you would vote for?
I think there's a couple people that would interest me if they would put their name in the ring.
Who would they be?
I think the current leader.
Who said she's not going to do it?
Yeah, she's
sitting here. She said she's.
Yeah, she might not do it. I think.
Well, she was pretty adamant.
Yeah, I mean, I think it takes more of a. It's a job that people want, and it's a job that people don't want, right? And I think you just have to encourage the right people to stand up and.
So who would be the other person you would vote for if they put that into the ring?
I think there's a couple of people. I think Jeff Barron would be good. I think Sylvan Richards would be good. I think Cole Simmons would be good. Simons would be good. I think there's a whole slew of people that would be a good leader.
What do they have to do? What are the first steps any leader has to do, do you think?
Well, for me, I think it's, you know, honoring the Constitution. They have a constitutional job to be opposition leader.
Yeah.
And secondly, when it comes to party, I think they have to sit there and really think about what went wrong. And think about where's the way forward. I don't know if the next OBA leader is going to be the leader in the next general election, but I think that we'll probably elect a leader that can do the job and can really sit there and do the job of rebuilding our party.
So you could envisage a situation where somebody could be a leader for 2 or 3 years, try and reinvigorate the party and stand down?
That could be.
Because you said you're not sure if they'd be there the next election?
That could be the narrative. I think you know, you only have 12 people to pick from, right? So,
well, in theory, you have more, of course, because Craig Kananier wasn't an MP.
No, but that was a change to the Constitution, and I don't think we're looking to change in the Constitution.
Is that still written into the Constitution that that could happen, or has that been taken out now?
That was never, and that was just an amendment for that.
Oh, okay. Okay. So you don't envisage that happening this time, so it'll come from the 12 MPs, do you think, the new leader?
Yeah.
Is there any chance that, do you think that the OBA could split?
I think that's more of a rhetoric from the other side. I think we have the foundation. I think definitely now being behind the scenes within the party and being in caucus and listening to people discuss the issues that are facing our country, we don't have a problem when it comes to ideology. We know who we are. We know who the party is. We did suffer a huge loss, and to some people that, you know, they think that that was our death notice. It wasn't our death notice. We just know that the work that we did in 2011, 2012, we need to get back to doing that work and start to really make an organization that's going to be that diversity, that's going to be that, you know, party that listens to the people and is able to effectively lead the country. We haven't, you know, strayed from that. And everybody's on the same page when it comes to doing the work that the opposition requires.
Perception comes from an awful lot, and a lot of perception is still that the party's full of UBP. Mm-hmm. Can you ever get over that?
I think that's natural attrition. I mean, that's simple, right?
Get over that perception?
You can't really control what other people's narratives are going to be. I think the perception of casting us as a UBP party is a perception that's been fed to us by the PLP.
It's been quite effective.
It's been quite effective, but they have UBP members also. And they don't like to acknowledge that. I mean, you have former UBP leaders, leaders within the PLP. And, you know, that just goes by the wayside because they saw the light, or, you know, it's hypocrisy at the highest levels. You know, you have people that are determined to do the work of the Bermudian people. You have people that are running and they are supporting the Bermudian people. And to talk about this, you know, well, if they're UBP, they're not good enough, or they don't have the same level of respect for everyday Bermudians, I think that assertion is absolutely crazy.
What's next for you, Justin? Politically,
next for me is just continue with FBA, doing more fireside events. So we have a fireside event coming up on the 26th at Gene Atherton's house. I encourage the public to go on Facebook and look for the event, and if they want to come or they want to come to future events, they can email fba@oba.bm. And also for me is to really start talking about policy. The government has now, you know, had their throne speech. They've had a multitude of current event issues that are within the public. And I think it's up to us to really sit there and have maybe policy roundtable discussions or town halls and really hold this government to account.
If you're offered a chance in the Senate, would you take it?
If that position is offered to me, then I would have to consider it, yeah.
Okay.
But it would be encouraging.
Well, that though, Justin, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to Burr News Current Affairs Podcast with Jeremy Deacon. Listen at your leisure on www.burrnews.com, your 24/7 Bermuda news source.